Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, a Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by awesome Patreon backers like the grandiose GM Gerrymander, the captivating Craig, and the esteemed Evan Harrison Cass. Today we have me, Ange, along with Jared and friend of the show, Carl Lehman. We are going to talk about the details we need to have in place when we run a game in a variety of genres. Before we dive into that main topic, though, we're going to ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question. What is a character you've played that would qualify as a fairly bog-standard archetype or stereotype? Jared, you go first.
So I was thinking about this, and it is probably the Death Watch Space Wolf that I played. My friend convinced me to play in his 40K RPG game. My only real 40K experience up to this point was all of the ads in Dragon Magazine over the years and playing the Dawn of War real-time strategy game. But he really wanted me to play because I had been DMing like constantly for years and years and hadn't gotten to be a player in forever. So I didn't really click with a lot of the Space Marine chapters, and then I finally saw the Space Wolves, and I was like, oh, cool, Space Vikings that don't follow the same rule book as the other Space Marines, and I was the most stereotypical Space Viking Space Wolf that you have ever seen. And that's it. That was my character.
That's awesome.
What about you, Carl?
So I recently hit a gamer achievement. I started playing in a local monthly campaign about 2 weeks ago. It's a very occasional game that meets, but importantly, it is in the last edition that of D&D that I have not played. So I have now, either in at least a one-shot or in a campaign, I've now collected all of the Infinity Stones of having played every D&D edition. So I decided, because it's a advanced Dungeons & Dragons circa 1980, I decided to go with the most bog-standard character I can, so I'm playing Dolgrin Ironledger, the Dwarven Fighter Cleric. I follow a very non-typical god, but it does not matter in AD&D 2nd Edition, so... but he's a lot of fun, actually.
That's hilarious. For me, in recent years, the character that probably qualifies the most is going to be Selena Marivaldi. She was a straightforward fighter, a class I never play. Generally speaking, I'm always leaning towards more of the agile, high dex characters like a rogue or a ranger or a spellcaster or social character like a sorcerer or a bard. But for whatever reason, with that game, I was like, you know what? I want to play something simple. I'm going to play the meat shield. She was a sword and board battle master fighter, basic straight across the board. The funny thing is, over the course of the campaign, she became the party leader, and through the acquisition of a headband of intellect, was also the smartest person at the party. You know, someone had to be babysitter to those chaos goblins, so that ended up being Selena. Moving on into our main topic. I think it's safe to say that all RPGs delve into genre fiction in some way or another. We've got fantasy, we've got science fiction, we've got supers, we've got horror, and so on. The thing is, even when we all know the general gist of what these genres are, the details can vary wildly within each of them. So we're going to dive into a few different genres and the details you need to clarify before you bring it to the table. So first up, what are your favorite genres to run?
So generally, fantasy, superheroes, space opera, and monster hunting, and various shades thereof in each of those.
What about you, Carl?
So I like sci-fi, fantasy. I'm a sucker for weirdly samurai games. I really enjoy that. And pulp, but usually with like a little bit of a horror adjacent supernatural stuff. The Mummy was very influential on me when I was a young gamer. So like, I like running a lot of games that feel like The Mummy or Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I think that movie was influential on a lot of us.
Yeah.
For me, I'm just going to say what they said. Other than the horror, I don't tend to go too much towards the horror. my preferences actually start when we get into the details like we're going to talk about. Because, like, I generally don't like dark and gritty, and I don't like hopeless. You know, I play games to be the big damn hero. So as long as the genre skews that direction, as long as the details of the genre skew in that direction, I'll play almost any genre. Getting us started right away, fantasy. It is so ubiquitous in RPGs. Are there any particular details we need to clarify before we bring the game to the table?
Oh, man. So before I forget about it, because Carl brought this up, when you mentioned samurai games and fantasy, it immediately made me think of Legacy of the Five Rings. And when we talk about, like, cutting something fine enough to realize that similar things are actually very different, if you've ever looked at the actual RPG of Legacy of the Five Rings, they also put out Adventures in Rokugan. Now, you could say Adventures in Rokugan is just like, oh, they just did a D20 version of Rokugan. No, it's actually supposed to be you aren't playing the heads of the clans and doing the political stuff. You are supposed to be adventurers in Adventures in Rokugan. It is a different genre in the same setting. And I really liked that about the way they presented it. And that's the thing that, you know, I'm going to say about fantasy is there are so many things that look similar that are not. Like, just because you have elves and dwarves in a setting does not mean that those elves and dwarves work the same way that they do in Tolkien or anything else. The details really do matter. Your dials are all over the place in fantasy. You have epic fantasy, you have gritty fantasy, you have high magic, you have low magic. Even with epic fantasy, Middle Earth is epic fantasy. It is completely, you know, mythical things, but Gandalf doesn't throw fireballs and lightning bolts, so it's not overtly magical either. So, I mean, there's all sorts of little tiny dials and everything that really matter that sometimes I don't think people realize how much they matter.
I think D&D is so dominant and has such a specific feel that folks tend to forget the wider variations that are out there. But of course, even if you're talking bog standard D&D, there are going to be variations depending upon which setting you're playing in. Forgotten Realms feels different from Eberron, which feels different from Greyhawk, and so on.
I'm going to go ahead and shout out one of my favorite games at the moment, which is Fabula Ultima. I think they do a really good job of setting up exactly what genre you're playing. And the nice thing is it's really customizable, but they came up with a very clever idea where that I'm going to use when I model other games, called the Eight Pillars. And it's just eight facts about every Fabula Ultima world that are true. And you work in and around those. And like all the details are very fungible, but you have ancient ruins and harsh lands, a world in peril, clashing communities, everything has a soul, magic and technology, heroes of many shapes and sizes. It's all about the heroes and mystery, discovery, and growth. And they give like a quick paragraph on each one, but they do an amazing job of making every Fabula Ultima game have a similar feel where all of the important details be different.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really interesting way of doing it. And then I think even beyond that, just having that discussion with your players at the very beginning of what you're going for as a GM. If I'm doing a collect a treasure-a-thon like Fafford and the Grey Mauser, or mm-hmm. am I doing Lord of the Rings? Am I doing, you know, the Day of Seven Thunders from L5R? You know, just be clear about what you want to run, and then that helps out a lot.
I do think, you know, as we said, fantasy is such a ubiquity in RPGs. There are so many different games out there that are tailored experiences to these variations in the genre. Like playing the One Ring is going to be a different experience than playing D&D. Playing Legend of the Five Rings is going to be a different experience than playing the Free League game with the ducks.
Oh, Dragonbane.
Yeah, Dragonbane. Yeah. The ducks.
There's also Wolfman. You
know? It's just, you know, in like bringing up Fabula Ultima, you know, that is an RPG modeled on JRPG video games. And you can talk about RPGs as video games having similar things like magic and swords and, you know, that type of adventure. But when you dig down into them, Final Fantasy is very different from Dragon Age.
Yeah.
These games have different feels based on these details that are in them. And when you're bringing a game to the table, you want to make sure that you know these specifics, because as we get into the next topic, we can talk about how not having these specifics in place can go awry.
Fantasy is almost like running on easy mode in some ways, because right now in today's day and age, you're doing 90% of the work of what type of fantasy you're going to run just by choosing a game system.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really good point, Ange.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's get into one that's a little more complicated. What about superheroes? What are the details here that should be established up front?
So, especially in the modern era, this is one of the genres that you really, I about said super, you really need to understand the expectations that people are bringing, because there is so much different media. Like, a lot of us that have been doing this forever are thinking comic books and maybe, you know, like animated series. And what some people coming to the table are bringing are The Boys. They're bringing these, you know, Hancock. You know, they've seen this media that is taking superheroes and using it to tell different types of stories than we may be thinking when we are thinking about playing a superhero game. And there is some overlap where you can do similar things. Like, somebody that's used to The Boys may be okay with you running an Invincible game. That, you know, I think Invincible is a more optimistic setting than The Boys, but I think there are still elements there that somebody understands better than if you're trying to do an X-Men 97 game and expecting that person whose frame of reference is The Boys to understand what that is trying to get at and what kind of story that's trying to tell. And I really think in a lot of ways, it does help to understand, like, the terminology that people have used for a while, like the different ages, like the Golden Age kind of being this very, you know, beginning of time. We don't need to explain much. People are in costumes. You punch somebody because they're a bad guy type of thing. You have your Silver Age where things get a little bit more wild. There's more sci-fi. There's more bombastic things. You have the Bronze Age where you take all of that stuff and you start giving people actual personal lives and character development. And then you have the Iron Age because people like guns and murdering people and life sucks. And that's probably the closest thing to The Boys that you're going to get in this whole list here.
I actually kind of wrote an article on this a while ago on The Stew, where I went to Gen Con and I played a Supers game and I was not having fun. The GM wasn't letting us lean into role play, and there was just a whole lot that I'm like, I made a mistake picking this game. And then I look around the table and realize everyone else is having a blast. And I'm like, your mileage may vary. And that is why it is very important when you are going to run a Supers game, you set up very clearly what type of game that is going to be. There's another article I wrote on The Stew years ago where it was basically based on the meme that shows a picture of the Justice League all looking absolutely glorious, mythic, and heroic. And it says, the team you wanted for your superhero game. And then below it was a picture of the Mystery Men, as ridiculous as they are. And it's like, the team your players gave you. My premise in this article was like, that's your fault as the GM, because you didn't set up the parameters of what your game was intending to be, and your players made characters they thought were going to be fun. And you didn't explain clearly to their, you know, what the players needed to hear about what you wanted out of that game. Superheroes has such a wide array of type of story that can be told in there that you really need to dial in on some of these details to get your game to feel cohesive.
Yeah, I think so. I think we're moving on to like the middleweight difficulty here, because while there's less game systems to deal with for superheroes, there is still a huge amount of media you can point to. So, you know, I think one of the things, even beyond Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age, is finding a piece of media that resonates with you as the GM that is kind of indicative of what you want to do. Like, if you wanted to do a, you know, if you wanted to do a everyone goes to school to learn thing, then you can do X-Men, you can do My Hero Academia, you can do one of my favorite book series, Superpowers. And if you want to do something a little bit more interpersonal and focused, you can point to like a game like Midnight Suns as something where it's like, okay, we're going to pull people from all over the power spectrum, but the focus is going to be some on something that none of them specialize in. We're going to have to do it that way. So I think in this case, pointing towards a piece of media is probably the best starting point.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of going for what feel you're going for the game.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, a lot of superhero games will be, you know, the mechanics are based on putting the characters all at the same kind of general power level so that they're all kind of in the same ballpark as far as like the abilities of what they can do. But that still doesn't change the fact that if you have Squirrel Girl and the Punisher on the same team, even if they are built on the same number of points, you're going to have some problems in the tonality of that game that those players want to see.
My favorite completely weird interaction of that that looked like it was going one direction and then totally didn't was Marvel launched this sub-brand called Marvel Knights, and it was all like street-level characters. They had a Spider-Man comic under that, but they also had Daredevil, they had Punisher. Then they did a comic series just called Marvel Knights, and it was going to have, like, Punisher and Cloak and Dagger and Black Widow and Daredevil. So everyone's thinking, oh, this is going to be this really gritty street-level thing. And in the opening arc, Punisher is using, like, a mini tactical nuke to blow up a troll from Asgard. It's like, what is going on here?
You have in the game in front of you, you have the ability to go hog wild. But to really have a cohesive game, you probably need to dial in a little bit.
Yeah.
So let's move on to horror. What type of specifics do we need for that kind of game?
So I think there's two really important things. It's one, what are your players comfortable with? Because there's a lot of, I think more than any other genre, horror can get very close to like needing content warnings and, you know, and treading on things that can make people uncomfortable. Because part of the point is to make them feel uncomfortable. But I think more than that, I think you kind of need the biggest thing you need for a horror game is actually weirdly buy-in from the players. Like you need buy-in from what the, you know, what genre we're in, because as I'm fond of saying, the characters don't know what genre they're in, but the players do. And you have to be willing to make kind of less than ideal decisions in some cases. Like, yeah, is there a serial killer running up and down your street? Yes, absolutely. The safest thing to do is to grab every weapon you can possibly lay your hands on and form a circle in the basement with one entrance. But that's not the genre you're playing in.
Mm-hmm.
So I think honestly, just being sensitive of where people are at and making sure that they're buying in for an actual horror game.
Yeah. Cause like I've said before, I'm not into horror all that much. There are certain GMs I will play their horror games because I know I can trust them to still have an enjoyable time with the game. But in general, I don't seek them out. At the same time, I love horror elements in games. Monster of the Week is one of my absolute favorites, but I can't qualify that as a horror game because you're hunting the monsters. You are heroes who are all across the spectrum of the type of characters that show up in these stories and go after the monsters to protect people. You know, that is a different flavor that just kind of, it dabbles, it dips its toe in the horror waters.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I was going to mention is a lot of times there is that peripheral that is like action horror, where there are horrible things doing horrible things to people, but you are not victims. You are the ones trying to keep those other people from getting preyed upon. So, you know, if you're thinking something like Supernatural or Blade or Van Helsing, it depends on the person, whether those are actual horror movies or not. But that is also definitely a different feel than if you do something like a survival horror game. One of the things I was thinking about here too is like, even like campaign length for things. Like, you could play a supernatural game for 15 seasons. I mean, wait, you could play. But the point is, you can literally do that monster of the week thing where they're just, you know, going out and finding a different type of monster and saving different people. But if you're going to do something like survival horror, you almost need to define what the threat is. It's not that it can't be a longer term game, but there is still something, you know, like there is still kind of an ending to it. Otherwise, it's hard to have that feeling of that kind of claustrophobic survival horror. If you're saying we're going to play this for 10 years, you know, it's like, that's hard to have that same buildup in. And even as I was thinking about this, like, Resident Evil is a series. There's tons of Resident Evil games now. The games don't happen one after another. You pick up with these people like years after one game ended, and then something happens again later on. If you did do them just back to back to back to back, you start losing that survival horror, oh no, it's happening again feeling that you get when you give it years in between the events that have happened.
That sounds like it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a cycle of horror that happens every set number of years. I think also with horror, you as the GM need to figure out kind of an internal consistency to the threat. You know, like if it's a survival horror game and you're dealing with zombies, what is the nature of those zombies? You know, you need to set those details so that, you know, you can feed them to the players as they discover them. You know, and I think out of all these games, that's probably one of the most important places to have that internal consistency. You know, regardless of whatever the monster horror is, like, even if you're doing a Final Girl style game where you've got some big, terrifying, unstoppable monster person dude who's coming into people's nightmares or coming out of sleepaway camps, whatever it is, it's like, what are the internal consistencies so in your head you know how to lean into them within the game? Moving on, our last genre we're going to touch on as a sole genre is science fiction, which is probably one of the ones that is going to need the most details determined upfront before you start the game. Where do we start with science fiction?
Part of this is just identifying all of the tools you have to work with, because you have hard science fiction, you have science fantasy, you have modern day, you have near future, you have far future, you have humans are the only species, or there are some aliens and it's noteworthy, or you have a whole cantina worth of completely weird things with their own different languages and completely weird anatomies. Another thing that I love about science fiction, if there is faster than light travel, I think that actually provides a lot of the flavor of it, because using hyperspace feels different than using warp bubbles, which feels different than using jump gates, which feels completely different than using like folding space drives. All of that actually communicates something about the setting. How hard is it? How much effort does it take? Even if you can, you know, move these astronomical distances. And, you know, it's even, this is another great example that I never thought of when I was a kid, obviously. This was like a revelation to me. I'm used to, like, Star Trek and Star Wars, everybody uses energy weapons, and then Aliens comes out, and they have faster-than-light travel, and obviously there's aliens, it's in the title, and they're using projectile weapons. So suddenly you get this feeling like it is the future, but also they're still operating under some of the rules that we would have to. Like, they aren't just, you know, able to, you know, aim a phaser at something and disintegrate it. So, I mean, there's just so many different things. And also, the state of healthcare and what do medical advances look like? Like, seriously, in Star Trek, there are certain things that if somebody is dead, they can literally bring them back as long as it's, you know, within a few minutes. Like, no, they're definitely dead. I could give it another 10 minutes. I'm going to wait. Okay, I can bring them back now. You know, obviously, they get their head cut off, maybe not so much. But, I mean, that's way different than some other setting where it's like you are exactly as vulnerable as you are in the real world if you get shot or stabbed or whatever.
I mean, I laugh, but we do all care about the state of healthcare.
Yes, I know.
I really like that Jerry started with the big things. So I think one of the most important things to do after you've figured out all the big stuff is actually take a little bit of time and think about what your average person's day-to-day life looks like in this world. Because I was really enjoying, I had a game that I was going to run a while ago, and I used Knights Black Agents to do it. And I made it into like kind of like a Traveler-esque sci-fi game. I came out with like six systems that were all linked together. I was really proud of the overarching plot and all of these details on the high level. And then I realized that all the skills in the game I was trying to use relied on like, well, what does your average person know about this world? And I realized that like I had like months more work to do before I could actually get that to happen. And so I think we, a lot of times, like, yeah, it's really important to know what you know, what's going on with FTL, but like, yeah, how does that affect the average person's life? And I had to like literally not run that game because I didn't have the time to invest in building up that world. So that's one of the reasons why, while I mm-hmm. love running sci-fi games, I basically run Star Trek or Star Wars because I know way more of that than I should, and I can run it kind of with my eyes closed.
Yeah, like I said, with fantasy, you know, there are games out there that are very specifically one of these settings, one of these genres. So you can just go pick up Edge of Empire and run some Star Wars. You can go pick up the Star Trek Adventures book and run some Star Trek. You could go get Traveler. They just kickstarted a 5e version of Traveler. You know, you can go get them to play these games that are very specific and have a lot of these details already figured out. But then there's something like what I did, and I grabbed the Savage World Science Fiction Companion, and I'm like, I'm going to run a game. And then I had to figure out, what is FTL? Do they have aliens? What is the nature of the world? What is communication like? You know, what is healthcare like? You know, you have to figure out all of these things so when you present it to your players, you have a cohesive world that makes sense that they can then play it. But with science fiction, there are so many dramatic things that can just change things, even the slightest, with a little bit of a change of dial.
It's really funny because even when you're talking about games, I think there are times when even companies get too ambitious about what they're trying to present and they don't realize that maybe they haven't laid some of the foundation. And I bring this up, you know, going back to your game that you ran and how I read through that book and I got this feeling that I can kind of see this as sort of like The Expanse, except most of the culture is developed from more Middle Eastern, you know, style cultures. And apparently I was so wrong about what the setting was like.
Yeah. I think Coriolis is a very beautiful book. It's got some very neat ideas in it. But when we dug into it, we ended up kind of butting into a lot of these little conflicts along the way that we weren't quite expecting when we started the campaign.
If you want to be a doctor in Coriolis, you're useless unless people are getting into fights and getting knocked out, literally knocked out. Like, you can't help people that are just slightly wounded. just throwing that out there, just so you know that.
Not that Jared's bitter or anything. Because there are so many genres that we aren't covering directly, are there any general guidelines you'd give for setting up a game in any genre?
I think the big thing you can do is answering the who, the what, and the why. Like, who are the player characters? What are they trying to do at the start of the game? And why are they trying to do it? Because that is going to let you answer a lot of basic genre questions and also anchor them in kind of the right mentality. And I think also just, I'm a big fan of this, but like, what emotional beats are you trying to hit? Like, are we doing a gritty, like, you know, if we're doing a CIA game, are we doing Jack Ryan? Like, are we doing that? Or are we doing like, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, where it's a lot of very terse negotiations across the Berlin Wall? versus running around and shooting a bunch of people.
I don't know how helpful this will be, but I did want to give an example of what happens when someone just grabs a non-standard genre, and by non-standard, I mean there aren't a lot of games that are focused on that genre, so you're kind of building it yourself. And what happens when you start a game like that with a very simple concept, but not enough boundaries? Because I had a friend that decided he wanted to run a Hollywood cop movie style game using D20 Modern. And in his mind, I think he was thinking Lethal Weapon. What proceeded to happen is they start doing like Smoking the Bandit levels of like car stunts and literally like drove a bulldozer off a cliff to land on the bad guy's car to flatten it. And it just got so, so over the top. Like, not that Lethal Weapon is not over the top, but it's over the top in a different way than dropping a bulldozer on someone's car. And it's just that thing. If you say cop movie, you might get somebody that's sitting here going, oh, we're going to play Training Day with D20 Modern. I guess I'll give that a try. And then you're thinking Beverly Hills Cop. And that is not the same genre. That is not the same thing, but they're both cop movies. And I also just realized that whole discussion is so marinated in the 80s that you know exactly how old I am.
You know, I mentioned this with superheroes, but I have, over the years, played different games where the GM just gave that blanket genre, and the characters that were brought to the table were so, they were all from different games. They were all from different stories. And sometimes, rarely, that can work. But other times you just end up with this dissonance between what's happening. The other thing I would say is a lot of this needs to be, this is, all of this is secretly a session zero conversation. You know, this is stuff you need to have at least thoughts about when you start session zero with your players, even if you're doing it to bring the conversation to your players to decide what this setting is going to be that the characters are going to be playing in. I've actually done this before with a science fiction game where I'm like, I don't know, what do you guys say? What kind of, what is our situation for traveling long distances? Do we have FTL? Do we have gates? Do we have what? They decided we had gates. Okay, we're good to go. You know, and it was that type of conversation to just get everyone on the same page. So when they made characters, they actually felt like they belonged in the universe of the game. This show is funded by the Gnome Soup Patreon. You too can Patreon back by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Soup website to the Gnome Soup Patreon. We love doing this, and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Scritches from Misdirected Narc Plays. Scritches is a crime, comedy, and drama actual play about three unlikely investigators looking into their friend's murder. It's like Chinatown and Zootopia got together and had a podcast, which you can listen to anywhere.
You can find all of us at gnomestew.com, along with various social media. Gnomes and Carl, anything else you want to give a shout out to?
I'll go ahead and shout out Symphony Entertainment. I'm over there usually making resources for our live plays and actual streams. But if you have any interest in horror and indie gaming, please come on over and check us out.
Jared.
So you can find a very fine Daggerheart campaign frame if you want to back the Thacko with Advantage Patreon that is inspired by Masters of the Universe. That's not what this plug is, but that is also a plug. I wanted to point out there's another Masters of the Universe inspired RPG offering that's been long anticipated. Masters of Umdar is this standalone Fate-based game that emulates sources like Masters of the Universe or Thundercats. According to Evil Hat, this is like the last Fate-based game they were planning to work on and help develop, but the game got more ambitious than they could really deliver on, so rather than just let the game fade into obscurity, it has been released as a complete rule set. It's finished, it's just not quite all the details that they wanted to do, all the bells and whistles that they wanted for the final product. So it is available on DriveThruRPG as pay what you want, but you should pay them generously because they've been putting work into this for a long time, and you should go check it out, and we will have a link to that in the show notes.
And very good timing considering the release of the Master of the Universe movie. So, do you think this episode was good enough in its genre? to keep us out of the stew.
Is this stew like hobbits would make, or is this something from a replicator?